The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is a special edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott, broadcasting live from the east side of Atlanta, like George and Wheezy, inside Joe's East Atlanta Coffee Shop. It is our monthly series, Coffee Conversations with Rose, in partnership with the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. And a big welcome to everyone here joining us live, as well as in our live stream. So we really appreciate it. It's a packed house. We should have sold tickets, could have made some money. But as we do with all our coffee conversations, the topics are all about this community, issues impacting the surrounding neighborhoods. And like so much of Atlanta, I know many of the surrounding neighborhoods, they've changed, they are changing. Some, maybe the change is not coming fast enough, or there are concerns about maintaining East Atlanta's identity and also keeping small businesses like this in business. And of course, affordable housing, transit and mobility, all those issues. We'll talk about all of that with Atlanta City Council member Liliana Bakhtiari. She's here, as well as community leaders. But as we always do, we get started with the people behind the coffee. So I want to welcome in Sarah Obregon. First, thank you. You're the owner of Joe's. Thank you for allowing us to be here. We really appreciate it. Okay, that's right. let's begin here because I ask everybody this question when I'm in their community. What is the identity of East Atlanta? Ooh, I got you.
You did. There's so many different people in East Atlanta, and that's what got me to move into this particular neighborhood. So I don't think there's any one identity. I think part of the draw was that it was a very open and accepting community when I first moved into this area. And, you know, that's been changing, like you just mentioned, but, you know, that's the battle that everybody kind of deals with, like keeping it open and accessible and also, you know, staying alive through the changes.
Now, I did get an email last night from someone to say, well, you know, part of East Atlanta is in DeKalb County. I'm like, come on, y'all. Let's just focus on East Atlanta. I've heard bohemian, eclectic, diverse. And then I got an email from someone to say, yeah, but it's changing because other big time, and someone used the word bippies were coming in. I'm like, really?
Is that hippies with money, or what does that mean?
I thought it was black people with hippies, but I don't know. But, you know, everyone's got their own version of what Atlanta's diverse neighborhoods. They want it to be the same. Maybe they grew up in this neighborhood. But there's also concerns about gentrification. I want to focus with you on being a small business owner. You're in this neighborhood. You see development happening. Are there any concerns you have?
I mean, clearly the prices just skyrocketing, and the city of Atlanta not stepping in enough to do something about controlling prices for housing first and foremost. Because, you know, business is business, but there is no affordable housing around here that I'm aware of anymore.
What's affordable to you?
That's what I'm saying. So affordable to me, realistically speaking, is not what real affordability is based on what people are making with service jobs and that type of stuff. So
do you have concerns that this neighborhood is slowly changing, or do you see it?
It's
really
changing
being able to
really fast.
Yeah.
Just from the pricing around here.
But just from price.
Mm-hmm. Well, which, you know, pricing pushes out people who can't no longer afford to rent around here. There are no more rentals. And also you can't afford to buy around here for under, I don't know, like $500-$600, probably in the close vicinity. Mm-hmm. So
does that concern you about then your regular customers who can walk here, who can bike here because it's in the community? And do you have concerns about that changing?
Yeah, that, it's definitely, you see it already happening, changing. I think the good thing about Joe's is one of the few places in East Atlanta that's really inclusive, and you see everybody from the community actually visiting on a daily basis. So, I mean, people are pretty loyal too. Like, people still visit as much as they can, even with, you know, prices going up and all that. So we're very lucky in that sense.
I want to talk about the origin story here at Joe's, because you actually, you picked this up, you mm-hmm. bought it from some friends.
Yes.
And you were smart enough to do it during the pandemic, right?
Yeah. Seemed like a good idea.
What was that transition like? Because you...
We were curbside for a long time, actually longer than a lot of businesses around the area, because like everybody else, we didn't know what was happening. There was a lot of misinformation, and we also had people that were immunocompromised that worked with us. So we kind of kept it what we thought was a little safer for a little bit longer than most people around here.
Did you have to lay anybody off?
There were several people who ended up being unable to work because they were taking care of people that were immunocompromised. So that kind of happened on its own through the pandemic. And then luckily there were several people that were able to continue working throughout the pandemic. And because we were curbside, it was easier to manage with a smaller staff.
Why a coffee shop? Atlanta's got, what, 622 coffee shops?
Yeah, but actually this one has been here the longest. Like, this is one of the longest established businesses in East Atlanta. So along with a couple other businesses that have been here for 20 plus years.
Well, let's talk about what's on the menu. Now, normally coffee shops, when I'm here, they have a special of the day. And they usually name it after me. Not that that's part of my ego, but I'm just saying, Sarah.
We'll have one tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow.
You know what? It'll be a spring drink, too, because rose. So, like, it'll be a rose water latte or something like
but
that.
But I'm having a nice turmeric something here.
Turmeric latte, yeah.
So if people come in today, they can get the turmeric latte.
Yep.
Tell me about your coffee.
So our coffee is, we get it from Intelligentsia Coffee. It was one of the first companies that started doing the whole transparency, buying from farmers, mm-hmm. and now, of course, they've grown to be a huge company, and they're all over the place. But we're still sourcing our coffee from Intelligentsia.
How do you see Joe's being a part of the community, being a meeting place for to talk about other issues that are important to this community? You all are embedded here, and people love y'all.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, we actually... You see, like, usually on the weekends, we have a lot of groups that meet here. City council person, like you said, Liliana, was here last Sunday. We have the East Atlanta Business Association that meets here. The East Atlanta Community Association usually meets here. Some of the schools, Burgess Peterson, and other various groups from the neighborhood actually always end up meeting over here.
As a business owner, do you worry, and maybe it's not a fair question, but do you worry about, hey, am I going to be here 2 years from now, 5 years from now?
Quite frankly, honestly, some days you take it one day at a time. I mean, yeah. You know, so we'll see. That's all you can do.
What conversations are you having with other small business owners about this community and you all being able to stay here and be a part of the neighborhoods?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest concerns is bigger developers that have a lot more money to offer. And then we're lucky that we deal with people that have owned some of the property for a long time, and they're also invested in the community. So hopefully they'll keep working with us and not sell out to bigger developers. But, you know, money's a very powerful tool, so we'll see.
Have people come in and offered you to...
I'm sure they have. We don't own the building, so, but I'm sure they offer all the time. It's a pretty hot area, so it's, you know, there's a lot of development, as you see, going on around here, so.
Is there room for something in East Atlanta Village that's not here that you would like to see?
Probably more vegan places.
Vegan places? Is there a need for vegan places, folks? Four people want vegan places. Is there a need for more barbecue over here? I'm a big barbecue person. Yeah. And where can you say barbecue and ice cream? That's my thing.
Yeah. So. See, we don't have ice cream in EAV proper, so that.
And why not? Why is it?
There used to be Dolly's across the street, and they just...
Well, I'll ask Nate Miner that, because he's the guy I understand that can get it done.
Oh, I don't know.
Where do you see this community, I don't know, 5 years from now? You think it will still have its same identity?
Clearly, it's going to keep changing. I mean, obviously, all the new people moving in, as they integrate themselves into the community, it'll change. And you just have to keep rolling with it, so...
You mentioned earlier when we started this conversation that there were some things you would hope the city government would do in terms of big developments coming in. What about other issues? You mentioned housing affordability, but what about public safety?
And you know, one of the good things about East Atlanta is we have a lot of bus routes that go through here. However, since there's no affordable housing, those buses are going to be not used anymore. And so that, you know what I mean? Like, it's all connected. Like, if you don't have affordable housing, the people that are using public transit are also not in the area anymore. So all those things, like just locking down taxes so that you're not competing with people who do have $1 million to spend on a house, you know?
Big developers that come in, do you feel like you could have a conversation with them about how they can be part of the community? They don't have to do that, but most of them say they will.
They will, and then when the end product ends here, it's never what they initially promised. So that's usually what happens.
Like what?
Like every big developer in Atlanta always says they're going to have affordable housing, and then the end product never includes the amount or the number of units that they initially promised.
No.
And then City of Atlanta
That's
never holds them accountable. So
I've had that conversation many times. You said they don't hold them accountable for that.
I mean, if you made a deal and you got a tax cut and then you're not delivering, any one of us would have to, you know, pay up or do something. But that's the way it's been.
You are also very vocal about other issues in the community, and you see that being part of being real. You want your neighbors to know that you're fighting with them on some of the same issues. Obviously, what's happening with the training facility in Southeast, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's probably a lot of misinformation. I'm also still reading a lot about it because there's so much info. And so I wouldn't call myself an expert on everything that's going on. It seems like it's a done deal based on everything I've read. I know... there's still people that are still trying to fight it and oppose it, but I don't know, unless there's other information that I haven't really read yet, it seems like the city has closed the book on this and it's a done deal. So we'll see.
If that is true, and it could happen, may not, we'll see. But if that facility was going to be built in this neighborhood, would you be more... You'd be more involved, be more vocal about it?
I mean, as far as being vocal and letting people know what you think, I don't know how much ultimate power that has in the end result.
But someone told me they look at you as a community leader. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Someone right in this room said she's a leader.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Welcome to being a leader.
Okay. Thanks.
What does that say to you, though, about what it means to have you here taking over this place? Because you didn't have to buy it.
Right.
You could have done anything, right?
Yeah.
So when someone says, Sarah's a leader in our community.
I hope I don't let them down, I guess, right?
What is next for this location, this business? Is there anything that you want to do that you haven't done yet? Do you want to expand the menu? Do you want to have WABE coffee night here?
We're open for anything community related. We actually want to start a series of documentaries on Thursdays, like educational documentaries, and then, you know, facilitate people getting to know each other, because like I said, there's so many new people moving into the neighborhood. So we're working on that, and hopefully we'll have it rolled out by next month. We were shooting for March, and then everything's gotten pushed back a little bit.
Do you have enough room? Because it's packed too. You got folks.
Yeah, but we're going to do it outside too. Especially now that it's nicer. So, yeah.
Right. What else is on? Anything else coming on that we should know about? Take this time. It's called free advertising. Our underwriting department hates this part. Like,
have we're always working on new recipes and new items and new coffee drinks. And then we are actually looking to see something ice cream related. So, but it's not locked down yet. So I'll call you and let you know.
I got you on that.
Okay.
I got you on that. What do you want folks to know about your commitment to this community as we wrap up?
Well, we're definitely here as long as we can hold on to the, you know, to the building and to, you know, the setup that we have right now. And hopefully it'll be a long time from now. So.
All right. And then when is the Rose Scott coffee drink going to be on that menu?
Tomorrow. Well, I'll work on it today.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Sarah Obregon, owner of Joe's East Atlanta Coffee Shop. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Closer Look. We're back in a moment.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
And Closer Look continues now from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott, and we are broadcasting live from Joe's East Atlanta Coffee Shop. It is our monthly series, Coffee Conversations with Rose Scott, in partnership with the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta, where we hear from community leaders and city council members representing the district, which leads me to this. Joining me now is Atlanta City Council Member Liliana Bakhtiari. Let me finish the script for y'all start clapping, whose district includes East Atlanta, Cabbage Town, East Lake, Kirkwood, and others. Councilmember Bakhtiari, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Y'all been busy.
Yeah, it's just a little bit.
Just a little bit. You know, it's been over a year, a little bit over a year since you took office. What has been some of those big lessons or you've had, or maybe I'll back up. What's been the biggest takeaway for you being an elected official now?
I think the biggest lesson to be learned is the biggest privilege you give up when you take elected office is giving up your own perspective. I would say that giving up my own perspective is probably the biggest takeaway, because this district is arguably one of the youngest, if not the youngest and most active district in the city. And so I'm very lucky to have such an engaged constituency, but that gives me a lot of perspectives to work with. It also shows me that where the city has needed to step up for quite some time is meeting our constituents where they are and actually working with the population to be like, this is how city council works, this is how government works, this is how much money we have to spend, this is what we can work it, this is what we can spend it on. And so the biggest thing has been bringing constituents to the table to have those conversations together rather than me making the decisions for them.
When you have those conversations with your constituents, what I imagine I might know this, but what are those top issues? I think I know, but I'll let you talk about it.
Repaving to cab.
What's wrong with the cab avenue?
I mean, not that I don't mind. Yeah. I think my back can speak for itself. But I think one of the big things is, one, just understanding what's happening in the city. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to send out a super in-depth newsletter. I try to have monthly coffee with council members to actually in the neighborhood at coffee shops like Joe's, like local coffee shops that are owned by local people, not chains. And also making sure to, like, one of the big things is, of course, worried about our green spaces, worried about public safety, worried about crime, worried about protecting our seniors. A really big one, of course, is the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on and on. Yes. And our unsheltered population, of course.
And absolutely. And Sarah talked about, you know, affordability, mm-hmm. and rents here. You told us before how the community input of renters is often stacked up against owners. And I want to talk about that a little bit further, because I think there is this perception that if someone is renting, that perhaps they don't have a voice. And mm-hmm. as someone who rents, that's totally not fair.
Right.
How do you balance that? And how do you tell those folks who want you to prioritize their issues, y'all know who you are, over somebody else?
So one of the things, I mean, we saw the recent, it was a survey done last year that we know a majority of the people living in Atlanta are renters. That even though our city is zoned 63%, I believe, zoned single family housing, that just so you know, that's not a good thing. And, but I would say that a majority of renters, I've been trying, we did a door knocking program. I'm trying to continue that door knocking program. To the folks that say that they should take priority because they're a homeowner, we actually had that issue sometime last year where someone said that they wanted me, that they were homeowners and the people they were having an argument with were renters and I needed to prioritize them, to which I responded, I will never entertain that sentence ever again. My constituency is my constituency. We have legacy renters here. Are you going to tell that to a 72-year-old woman who's been renting her home for and raised her kids in a home that's been rented that she's lived in for, I don't know, 2-3 generations? No. Mm-hmm. A renter has just as equal a say, just because they may not have the privilege or they have faced a predatory lending situation or a reverse mortgage and are having to rent their home now in a different area in our district, that doesn't make their perspective any less important.
Well, and everyone doesn't want to be a homeowner. Some people don't want to be a homeowner.
I own a home. It is a pain in the butt.
How are your taxes?
Somebody give Arthur a call.
Arthur Ferdinand?
Oh, yeah.
You got his number, don't you?
No. I do not.
It's tax commission.
He gets to write his own paycheck. Home renters are bring a different perspective to the table than homeowners, and is equally as important, if not more so, because of the diversity of subjective experiences.
But I am curious, council member, how do you balance that too? Because recently there was a Reynoldstown neighborhood organization. Mm-hmm. That rejected a what they would consider a deeply affordable housing, I think it was at 111 Moreland.
Correct.
This is a development plan specifically to help those transitioning out of being unsheltered, which mm-hmm. you just talked about.
Yep.
So what do you tell that neighborhood?
So that conversation is not completely done yet.
Okay.
Because Atlanta Housing and folks want to move forward to that project. So for anyone here that does not or has knowledge of what's happening with our unsheltered population in the city of Atlanta. We don't have low barrier shelters. What I mean by low barrier is we don't have a shelter where people can just walk in and receive housing. Oftentimes an ID is required or a COVID test, things of that nature. We have very high barrier shelters. We do not have a housing first approach. We do not have wraparound services. We do not have a 24/7 navigation center where somebody experiencing homelessness or addiction or a mental health crisis can walk in and be connected to resources in real time. We've done a lot of studies on it. We love to study things, but at some point in time, you have to actually put those things into action. And so things are like a supportive housing project are extremely important because you get to house people and treat them where they are. This conversation, though, it's a lot more around 111 is a lot more complex than just people not wanting it in their backyard, I would say.
Well, then we got some time. Let's dig into it. Why is it complex?
So that conversation happened before I came into office. There mm-hmm. was a lot of, I think, love lost between the developer, who's a local developer and a wonderful human being, and the neighborhood, who are also people I work with every day, who are also wonderful folks. And oftentimes governing is mediating between people who have a difference of opinion. And the neighborhood felt as though untruths were said by the developer. The developer felt that the neighborhood wasn't willing to listen to the people who needed the housing. And so what I have been trying to do is mediate that conversation. A lot of that conversation has to do with a lot of the neighborhood feels that there are some people that it is NIMBYism, don't get me wrong, but I would say a majority of folks feel that there needs to be community spaces in supportive housing programs that you can't just cram people in. You actually need to give them a community space. You need to give them a green space. I think those are fair points, and we have to figure out how to move forward on that.
Well, but at first you got to get them from being unsheltered to sheltered. So
correct.
where do you stand? You said mediate, but where do you stand in support or more information is needed?
Yeah, I always stand in support of supportive housing and density. But the fact of the matter is, and this is where that part is I talked about, where I can't just go on my opinion. I will push the neighborhood. I will have the conversations. I will say why it's a necessary thing, and I will go hard in on my opinion. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I vote with the neighborhood. But however, I am working to mediate
what
that
mean
situation.
You vote with the neighborhood?
The neighborhood makes a decision, and they were the ones who elected me into office. And one of the promises I made was, I will vote with you. But that also means that I can engage in that conversation. I'm not going to just let them have an opinion and walk away. I'm going to be in the room for those conversations. I'm going to point out the places where the city has failed. I'm going to point out that housing is necessary. And I'm going to push to get it across the finish line in a way that takes that where equal sacrifices are being made on both sides.
But in the end, if the neighborhood, this neighborhood of people, this organization, if they reject it, But you, because you've told me before, you told me a story, you've experienced being unsheltered.
I have.
You lived in your car for some time, council member, so you know what that's like.
Yeah, I do.
So what do you say to someone who says, well, why can't you also fight and push for that population? And can you help? So that if you're in the middle, mm-hmm. let's have a solution as opposed to just saying, I'm going to vote the way the neighborhood votes.
That's where I feel empowered in the situation, where I feel hopeful, is that the neighborhood has not said, we do not want this at all. They're saying, can we design this in a way that allows people that are living in this space, because on average, we've been told that people live there 5 to 7 years. Can we design this in a way so that people are not feeling boxed into a living, into a housing situation? Can mm-hmm. we design this in a way that they have access to a kitchen, that they have a community space, that where they can engage with each other, that they have a green space, so that there's community building there, so that there's human mm-hmm. connection instead of people being crammed into a space? So I would say that through this project, it's also been educative for me, because it shows me where we as a city have failed in terms of pushing back on people who have misinformation, okay. and also educating folks on why this is so needed. So the conversation, I'm happy to say, is not over.
Okay.
And I do think we will get across the finish line. It just will not be in the form that it is now.
Recently, you all have said you want to audit MARTA's, more MARTA, that tax that we all voted for in 2016.
Correct.
How much money do you get for this district in terms of transit projects?
So right now, in terms of, we have about $2 million that we're getting in terms of transit projects. That's in addition to the green space dollars we're getting, mm-hmm. of which I just donated $1 million to Park Pride, specifically to green spaces in District 5, so that the neighborhood could actually, we creating a grant program so the neighborhood can actually determine where those dollars go. And then we have each of the neighborhoods that have been given specific dollars for different projects in their community, of which the neighborhood will determine where those dollars go.
So green space,
mm-hmm.
using transit money?
No, these okay. are actual specific green space. Okay. These are specific park bond dollars.
Okay. What about transit money? You mentioned the cab,
yes.
We get that, but what else? Transit and mobility is connected,
correct,
to people's housing mm-hmm. circumstances. You know that.
Yep.
You know, you've taken MARTA back in the day. You know, so.
Yeah, well, back when EMA and I-85 exploded and we were all forced to take MARTA. No, I've taken MARTA.
Don't even bring up the bridge. It wasn't their fault. No. I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't know.
Who knows? It's still one of the great mysteries
yeah.
of Atlanta. The transit project. So one of the things that we're working on, have been working on for the last year and some change, is doing an audit of sidewalks in District 5. Mm-hmm. That's still an ongoing thing. And we are working to put those in a priority list, because the city has about a $2 billion backlog in sidewalks. And rather than waiting on city money, I want to build a capital campaign around that.
Let's stop right uh-huh. there.
Sure.
Every council member and even President Doug Shipman, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
These projects have been on a list for some more than a decade.
Correct.
I've heard, well, it's a workforce issue. We don't have enough people. But let's be clear.
Mm-hmm.
There are some neighborhoods that got sidewalks, and there are some neighborhoods from my folks on the west side and south side of Atlanta that don't have sidewalks.
Correct.
How are we prioritizing these projects?
I would say, one, as we know, there is an absolute wealth gap in Atlanta, and there is the tale of two cities. Some would say the tale of three, tale of four cities. So absolutely, you have districts 12, 11, 10. You have district 12 that has some of the highest low-income areas in the entire city.
But that should not be the reason they don't get their projects.
I'm saying that I agree with you. And I'm
right.
saying that it's absolutely a tale of, it's absolutely a division. Because as we know, this district is becoming increasingly affluent, and we're developing out our minority population, have been for a long time. And the reason I would say that a lot of it is also up to the council member on how those dollars are spent.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as we know, it's no surprise that over the years, and why the community has lost so much faith in T-Splost, is that oftentimes dollars that have been promised, like to DeKalb Avenue, like to certain sidewalks, get hijacked for other things.
Why can't you all, can you all say, look, this is not how we want to do this? Who makes this decision?
Well, now we have a council that is saying that. That is not okay. how we want to do it. We have a council that's pushing back on MARTA, that's pushing back on the use of our dollars to go to other projects, like, you know, like we had in the last year of the, not the last administration, but the administration before, in the building of a $33, $35 million bridge to nowhere, because it was a vanity project. And that money was hijacked away from repaving in my district of Rocky Ford. and it was hijacked away from the repaving of DeKalb Avenue, and that has got to stop. Mm-hmm. And there have been instances where I've been asked if dollars could come out of my DeKalb Avenue funds to go towards other projects, and I said absolutely not, because we have promised the district now for decades that DeKalb Avenue would be repaved. You're not touching that money. So that's one of the reasons I've been working to be accountable and try to tell people what we're spending money on and why I bring neighbors to the table to have the discussion of how those dollars are going to be spent.
This audit of MARTA, which you it was unanimous, all supported that. How optimistic are you that that will actually happen, that MARTA is going to just open up their books and say, and they talked about transparency was key.
Yes.
You know, they sent me a statement. Mm-hmm. So how optimistic are you that when you see this, you will see that maybe it's not as bad as what you all think, or it's worse?
Yeah, I mean, I have hope that we're moving in the right direction. Am I frustrated with a change from rail to bus rapid transit into other conversations? Yes. Because, I mean, I would say how many people in here have heard that we were going to get Beltline Rail now for how many years? Yeah, I mean, you can all clap if you want to respond to that. Because light rail, as we know, is a quarter the cost of heavy rail. It's easier to build. We have shovel-ready projects. We have made excuse after excuse after excuse. And I would say that the Beltline was built in such a way that put vanity and ego over what was best for constituents, because we should have built housing first before you built a sidewalk. You should have built rail first before you built a sidewalk, and we did everything backwards. And so now we're trying to make, where you have a council that's trying to learn where we've made mistakes so we can make up those differences, and we're trying to push for answers. But again, we have the only transit entity in the entire country that's private. Mm-hmm. So we're working to figure that out. It's not easy, but we're getting there.
I want to shift for a moment, because we also talked last time about WellStar.
Yes.
When it closed its Atlanta Hospital campus, mm-hmm. and that was partially in your district.
Yes, the main campus was in my district, yes.
And there's been a lot of conversations since then, but have you had a chance to speak with anyone from WellStar?
No. But I'm also not surprised. When a medical agency that pretends to be a nonprofit so it can get a tax cut but doesn't actually give a damn about its patients is shutting down hospitals in predominantly black areas that are low income so that it can make dollars and is monetizing human lives so that it can keep open hospitals in affluent white areas. They may claim all day long, they can tell me all day long that that was not their plan. That is the biggest lie. And I'm so happy. And I'm so happy that the I believe, I want to say that either it's being discussed that they are being stripped of their nonprofit status, or it happened yesterday. It's something along there. But WellStar is not a nonprofit. WellStar is a for-profit company that is making money off of people dying and making money off of white folks being able to pay for insurance and for their procedures.
The property was put under a moratorium for redevelopment. Where does that stand now?
I believe the mayor is leading the conversation on that. I know. I believe the rumor was that WellStar had a buyer lined up. And if I hear the word luxury one more damn time. So the mayor, and I applauded him for that, put in a moratorium to keep any of the transfer of that property happening while we had a conversation on what is best for the community. And I want to say, WellStar, it's not too late. Out of the goodness of your very big hearts, you can still donate a portion of that land for a wraparound wellness center in the heart of our city. So maybe you should do that instead of continuing to reap dollars off of unsuspecting people in low-income areas that don't know you're shutting down their hospitals.
What? The Liliana Bakhtiari show. Let's talk about public safety training facility for a moment here before mm-hmm. I let you go. I've talked to a attorney.
Yes.
Who specializes in these types of deals. Mm-hmm. You might have heard on the program.
Yep.
Who said, look, the city of Atlanta does have a way out of this planned fire and training facility.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? I believe the attorney, Alex Joseph, might have sent all of this to the city council. You read it. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, not only did she send it to the city council, I believe most of the people in this room tagged me on Twitter and or Facebook and or Instagram with that same information. Thank you for that. My thoughts are that it is, so I am not a lawyer. I take in every perspective I possibly can. I think it's wonderful that people are stepping up to say, I don't believe this is correct, and there's more than one narrative in the room. Obviously, our council disagrees with that. I'm not going to take our council at their word. I'm still gathering my information, and I'm still asking questions.
One key provision that she talked about was that, obviously, you all as a council mm-hmm. cannot terminate that contract. Mayor Andre Dickens, by the way, will be a guest on this program tomorrow, according to Attorney Joseph, can terminate this contract without cause.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he should do that?
I think that I know that my district, that a majority of my district, more than half, wants this facility moved. And I would say that the way that this conversation has been conducted from the very beginning happened behind closed doors, that the community did not know that this was going to happen in this location until the decisions were made. I think that what I am worried about, more so than anything, is it's a loss of community trust. My district, other districts, other council members will say their district is for it. I would say a majority of my district is not. And one of the things I'm working to do is, because this conversation has created such a polarized environment, understandably, is I am going to start in the next 2 weeks hosting town halls around my district to hear more. I'm going to go start knocking on doors in the Boulder Crest area, and I'm going to find out how people actually feel rather than being it told to me on the internet and by other people that claim that they know more than I do because they read a survey. So I'm taking the conversation off the internet and in person, something I should have done long ago, and I'm so sorry for that. But I am not done asking questions, and I am not done pushing for accountability, and I am not done pressuring, asking for more accountability from APF.
You believe that that facility should not continue as planned. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that we absolutely need a facility, but the facility in its current form is creating a lot of issues, and we need to take a beat and ask ourselves, are we going to continue forward in this location, even though we have as much, even though an officer has been shot and even though someone has been killed? There's a lot of different information out there, and I cannot understand why we are moving forward here until I have all my facts.
What facts are you missing, Councilmember?
Well, I'm still waiting on a fact sheet. I haven't gotten a fact sheet since spring of last year.
What are you expecting to get from this fact sheet?
Well, one, I want to know, was there a survey of any other locations? That question has still not been answered. What I want to know is, and I think the conversation being lost here is, you know, Sunday people came to talk to me about this, and I think one of the framings that was really beautiful was the beloved community. And I think one of the things that we should be asking ourselves in terms of public safety is, one, we know the police and fire need a new training facility. I'm not denying that at all.
Okay.
But public safety looks a lot of different ways. And my goal in determining when I move forward as a council person that's talking about my district and something my district has come to me about, because my district is not shy, y'all are very opinionated, is that the beloved community we need to be spending dollars in a way that allows the community to also take care of itself and take care of each other. Because government in its current form, I should not be a gatekeeper for one-offs. We should be making making sweeping legislative changes that allow for more housing affordability, that allow for more wraparound services, that allow for, yes, fire and police are important, but our 911 facility needs to be brought up to date, and we also need to have staffing shortages across the board that need to be filled, and we need to also be investing money in public programming around green spaces and connecting kids to their green spaces, and also investing in conflict resolution starting at an elementary school age.
Would you like for Mayor Andre Dickens to terminate this contract, though?
I'll give you two answers. There's my personal, can I give my personal opinion, and then my council opinion?
I can't tell you what to say or what to think. I just want you to answer the question.
My personal feelings are, I want this to be moved, and I would like for this to be terminated. My council opinion is, I do not understand at all the complexity of what the promises are tied into this facility, that I am not done asking questions, that I'm really upset that APF has left us holding the water, that the communication around this has been absolutely awful, that there's a lack of transparency, and that I understand, I know that the mayor walked Boulder Walk and walked those neighborhoods and said that they didn't find anybody against it, but I would also encourage them to please come to my district, where there are a lot of people that are very upset and that have a lot of questions.
What is the consensus of the council? You don't have to name them, but in terms of for and against, do you have even enough votes to pass a resolution?
No.
Really?
No. There are not enough votes. If we introduced a resolution and it was voted on tomorrow, there would be not enough votes at all to cancel this thing. And the thing that I also struggle with as somebody on council who has a district that's such and such close proximity to this is that the reality is, if I take the stand, and I have to be very tactful because I cannot get anything across the finish line for my district without seven other people and without the administration. And I will say that the mayor has had a very open door policy with me, and he has been super communicative, and I know he is in over his head, and there is a lot going on, and I know that we are inheriting the mistakes of a lot of people that came before us, because let's be real, the last administration did not do their job. But at the same time, I am struggling because I want to say that I have been very effective in my first term. We got a lot done. I authored 82 papers that made it across the finish line. And I am very worried that, and this is why I'm also trying to do this in such a deliberate and in-person way, is that my fear is that if I just, I have to be very tactful about how we get this done. And because I also, the thing about government is that you don't get the, you don't have the privilege of not talking to other people. You work with people with differing perspectives every single day. I work across the table every single day, and I disagree with a lot of my colleagues. But my colleagues and all, in order to pass anything to take care of my district, that navigation center I'm fighting for, that housing first approach I'm fighting for, that low barrier shelter I'm fighting for, working on different things to help our unhoused people, to help seniors stay in their homes, all of that goes away.
So
if I isolate myself, which in some ways I already have.
So if you don't toe the majority line, you feel like your district will suffer. You won't get all the things that you're fighting for.
Yeah. I'm not saying anyone has said that to me, but that is the reality. We've seen it. That's government. You watch people isolate themselves all the time. You can't get things passed. It's a team game. And I have very honest and open conversations with my colleagues every day, all the time, about how I feel about this. And the consensus is they feel that they've inherited this issue. And that now that there is no canceling or getting out of this lease, whether that is true is to be determined. I still am learning. I'm still learning about what the facts are and what they aren't, because I have so many perspectives coming at me a day, and I'm working to hear so many perspectives that, like, honestly, it feels like my brain's coming out of my ears. But I am still in the dark about so many things.
What more do you think needs to happen? Because someone has lost their life.
Yes. Well, one, I would really like for the media to start portraying only one side of the story. Because
talk about us.
No, not you.
I'm going to say.
No, not you, Rose.
Blaming us.
There are certain people, and we know there are certain agencies that have painted this as a violent outsider piece. And I would say that some of the perspectives I heard on Sunday have shown me that
I want to be fair. You're talking about the protesters.
Yes. And there are people in this room that have gone there and done peaceful, do food giveaways.
The peaceful. They're yes. Peaceful people, and there are people who ain't so peaceful.
I would say that the majority is peaceful. And I would say that there is a smaller portion of folks, especially white folks, that make it a pattern to hijack movements that are not about them.
Well, then should the peaceful people tell the non-peaceful people to go somewhere and quit jacking up our neighborhood?
I mean, I would love it if they tell the non-peaceful people to stop setting the forest on fire, but, you know, and trashing it. But at the same time, this is a very broad coalition. There's a lot of different factors in it. I don't know what they're saying to each other. I speak to preschool coalitions. I speak to my constituents that are partaking. I speak to all of them, and a lot of folks feel that there is a narrative being shaped where only people from outside of the state are being arrested to shape a certain narrative. I'm still finding out if that is true.
How are you going about doing that?
By talking to people that were there, by knocking doors, mm-hmm. Getting ready to do this listening tour of my district, by meeting with people who were there, by meeting with journalists and different folks.
But are you going to meet with APD?
Yes, of course. Chief Sheerbaum has an open door policy. Yeah. And I will say this, and people might disagree with me, and I will also say that I disagree with the folks who were trying to shoot off explosives in officers' faces and trying to blind them and doing things of that nature. I completely disagree with that approach, completely. And as much as I may disagree with certain tactics, I'm a city official first and foremost, and those are people I also have to take care of. And Chief Sheerbaum has done an amazing job of always being there for me when I have questions, but keep in mind this is a multi-jurisdictional thing, and he inherited as well. But I do know he is there every single time I have a question. He is always there for me.
I asked you about this neighborhood, this community's identity. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this community in 2 years, 5 years?
2 years, Rose? Really? Two? Five? We can do five.
6 months. I don't know. Things are changing.
No, they're changing very rapidly. One of the things I hope to do in our district is, one, a diversity of tactic when it comes to public safety. Having navigation centers established, because this district really cares about its unsheltered community, which I really appreciate. But there is a large amount of drug dealing that happens here. There are people that work to get that are putting folks in danger with the drug dealing that is going on, and so we're working to tackle that. But my real hope is that in 5 years we will have worked as a neighborhood to identify the deficit of housing that is occurring, by basing it off of the population growth that's occurring over the next 20 years and making a map of how much housing needs to be added to every neighborhood, not just ours. Yes, that means you too, Buckhead. But adding housing to every single neighborhood over the next 20 years and telling neighborhoods, this is how much housing has to come into your community. How do you want it to come in? And I want my neighborhood to be the first that says, that comes up, our neighborhood's come up with a master plan of how we want that housing coming into our community, how much of it's going to be market rate, how much of it is going to be supportive, how much of it is going to be workforce development. And I think that we can really, I think District 5 has the capacity and the passion to lead the way of what Atlanta could look like.
Atlanta City Councilmember Liliana Bakhtiari, as always, thank you for taking the time. You're listening to Closer Look. We're back in a moment. We'll talk business. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta, and we are live sipping on some coffee conversations inside Joe's East Atlanta Coffee Shop. This is our monthly series, Coffee Conversations, in partnership with the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. And as always, we spend time with folks from the community, and I'm joined now by Nate Miner, president of the East Atlanta Business Association and owner of Screen Fixin', based here in East Atlanta. Nate, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Where the ice cream shop? Let's get that out the way.
We lost that ice cream shop a while back, and it has not come back. So maybe, as they were talking about, maybe we get ice cream here at Joe's Coffee.
Yeah. How long have you been a business owner in the neighborhood?
Since 2015 is when I opened a brick and mortar here.
Mm-hmm. Why this community? Why this neighborhood?
I moved here just under 20 years ago, and as I kind of explored the community, I learned that I had also had a history here that I didn't know about. And that was that my fourth uncle or whatever was the founder of the Marbet Minor Mercantile Store, which is the building next door. He was also co-counsel of the old Ninth Ward. He had Liliana's job.
Yeah.
And I started to learn more about the history of the community. I love the people here, it seemed like the right place to have a business, not to mention I live around the corner, so I can walk to work.
Is this a community that a small business can now come in and thrive, Nate?
3 years ago, I would have said yes.
Yeah.
I think that it's getting harder. You know, we have more developments coming in, and with those developments, we're seeing rent increases for commercial properties increase a lot. So it's a lot harder for our local neighbors to open up a business than it ever has been in this neighborhood.
What about for those businesses that are already here? Are some of them, and you don't have to name them, but have they told you, look, we don't know if we can stay here because of that increasing the price and rent? And
I mean, fortunately, I haven't had any of those conversations yet. I'm afraid they're coming, though. I mean, I think that the more development that comes in, the more larger property owners that we have, we have is a missing piece, I feel like, in this community, and that is owner-operators. We don't have owner-operators that own their brick-and-mortar building. Mm-hmm. We have a number of landlords who own those buildings. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a shift we really need to somehow figure out. We need a pathway for those business owners to actually own the building that they're doing business in.
Any idea what that pathway looks like or what it entails?
I would really like to see some more effort from Invest Atlanta developing potential programs for that. I've seen that there's other pilot programs for that in other cities.
Like what?
I think it's Chicago has one, if I'm not mistaken. And basically, it's a training program that gets you to the point of not just door to door to open up your business. It is, here's how you open up your business. with a plan to purchase the brick and mortar you're in.
How diverse are the businesses here in terms of ownership?
I think that we have, a great amount of diversity. I think some of that is also changing. It's not something that we want to see change. This neighborhood has been incredibly eclectic and diverse for the entire time I've been here, as well as, you know, anybody here who's been here significantly longer than me. And we see a lot of changing in certain businesses. And so the diversity is strong, but we need to keep it that way.
How do you do that?
I think through the East Atlanta Business Association, it's one of our key goals is to help make sure that all of our business owners are kind of aware that, one, that we exist, mm-hmm. and that that we're there to support them. So when they, you know, need things, when they're applying for something new, trying to make a change, that we would like to be the first call so that we can help them go through that process.
You mentioned this community being eclectic, and I've heard the word bohemian, and I've heard people say diverse, obviously. But concerns about this neighborhood, this community, its identity changing because of big development. I mean, have y'all been to Harlem, New York? It's a little bit different than it was when I went back there in 1998 or something like that. And it still has some of its flavor, but in a sense, some of it's gone too.
Right.
So you see this neighborhood in danger of losing its flavor, its identity, because of either big development or folks having to shut down or move out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that we do have some property owners who, aren't maybe not the best property owners, to be honest. But they do have a key clientele, and some of those are legacy businesses that have been here and will be here for years to come. Because those rents are affordable. But then when we look at other larger companies coming in and purchasing up property, it's concerning because they're always going to come in, they're going to flip the building, and they're going to increase your rent. And the second your rent increases, it could be the end of your business.
You rent?
Yes. You rent? Yes.
You have a nice landlord?
We're live. So I have a landlord.
I want to be fair about that. You have a good relationship with your landlord.
I do. They, one of the.
See how I saved you there?
Yeah, you did. One of the great things about, landlords is until you need them, if you don't see them that much, that's great. And I don't see mine that much. So we have a property management company that we do see a little bit more of. We had an emergency at our building, and they had somebody out in under, an hour. So mm-hmm. I think they're doing the right thing. Whereas we have other property owners in the community who, if you have an emergency in your building, it's on you.
Mm-hmm. What do you hear from the community or from your businesses in terms of what they would like, other than what you've already told me? Is there something else that either the city could be a part of, or you mentioned Invest Atlanta, and I know they have programs for first-time homeowners and things like that. What else is missing, you think, to help preserve the identity of East Atlanta?
Well, I think that a lot of that is kind of coming through our Main Street approach. We've been working with the City of Atlanta Department of Planning on this Atlanta Main Streets initiative, and Atlanta Main Streets is based on design, organization, promotion, and economic development. And a lot of the description of Atlanta Main Street sounds like you're kind of trying to change things. There's big words like transformation strategies. But what we're looking for is to actually use that program to set goals to maintain the identity and character of the community, do bigger placemaking things. And we do. We need more support from the city. We need, as an organization that, both our organization and the East Atlanta Community Association need more support from the city. If you were to calculate the volunteer hours of people mm-hmm. in our community that are fighting to make this neighborhood great, it's absurd.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate enough through the Atlanta Main Street program to hire somebody part-time as our Main Street coordinator who kind of helps us follow that process. But the East Atlanta Community Association doesn't have that. They have a volunteer board that, spends countless hours on this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So you guys got it. Is there a coalition? Is there enough of a coalition here than fighting for you all and getting those conversations? And I, people say this all the time. Everybody's got a seat at the table. Well, even when you get to the table, they don't let you talk. So do you have this coalition, enough of a coalition there to move this conversation into action? Because I got to tell you, and I've been doing this for a long time, which means I'm old. People come on this program, or when I was in the WAB newsroom, and I ask them about solutions, and they all say the same thing. It's a holistic approach, and we got to mobilize. And here we are in 2023, and I'm asking the same questions about how do we preserve small businesses like Joe's and like yours, and how do we make sure that women of color and the LGBT community owners, everybody has something that they can offer to a community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's a key component in that. And I think that Liliana spoke to a lot of it. And that is community support. Without this community, my business would have closed a long time ago. Joe's would have closed a long time ago. So while it's important to look at bigger initiatives, it's also just important to remind everybody that this is how full Joe should be every day.
Ah, Nate put y'all on blast. So we want the same, all y'all to come back tomorrow.
And they can have a rose.
They can have a rose, absolutely. Yeah. I'll ask you the same thing. Where do you see this community in 2 years? Will it still be the same?
I think it'll be drastically different, but I don't necessarily see that as bad. There's going to be a lot of changes, but fortunately, you know, some of the developers who are developing here do at least communicate with us.
Let me ask you this, Nate. What don't you need in this community if you had your way? What type of, I got him on the spot.
What type of business?
Development.
Well, what we don't.
Like, do you need another screen fixing business?
We don't need another, we don't need any more electronics repairs. And we probably don't need a whole lot more hookah places.
We're going to end on that, Nate. I see some hookah people out here. Nate Miner, president of the East Atlanta Business Association. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Can you believe the time, folks? That is it for this special edition of Closer. I know. Oh, wow. Look at this. This is great. That's it for this special edition of Closer Looks Coffee Conversation. Today's live stream, guess what, was produced by Samantha Killebrew. Field producers Perry Patterson and Brian Simmons. Our engineers are Soria Vanderwerth and Shelly Canavy. She's back at WAB Studio One. Tiffany Griffith is our supervising producer. Where's Daniel Razel? He rides a bike. Get Daniel over there in the corner. Special thanks to our Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta, our other producer, LaShawn Hudson, Joe's East Atlanta Coffee Shop, Sarah, and the entire team. Oh, I got to say their name because they may not give me more coffee. Joy Williams and Mercedes Toro, thank you. And, of course, the reason we do what we do because of you, the community. Stay tuned to WABE. From Atlanta, I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE Politics podcast. New name, same on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE Politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we talk to politicians and voters to break down each week's biggest headlines. New episodes drop on Fridays. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.
WABE.